Today is Friday, March 20th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard coming to you from Washington from an alternative location this week and perhaps for some weeks to come. We at Voice of America are practicing social distancing, so we are all working from home rather than working in our office. Our commitment to bringing you the most accurate, the most timely information about this coronavirus pandemic, paramount to us. We will continue with that. Our lead story at this point at voanews.com comes to us from Steve Herman. Steve Herman is the senior White House correspondent for Voice of America. This story titled, U.S. Emergency Responders Go on Highest Alert. This is a story that's been getting a little bit more attention, but perhaps not even enough. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, also known as FEMA, has been activated at the highest level nationwide. And President Donald Trump is using further authority of the office to respond to the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, we'll be invoking the Defense Production Act just in case we need it, Mr. Trump said at a news conference Wednesday in the White House briefing room. Now, that act is the primary source of presidential authorities that can expedite and expand the supply of resources from the country's industrial base to support national defense. In other words, if the president deems that we need less cars and we need more respirators, he can make that happen under the special powers of this act. It will allow the production of more masks, other essential healthcare equipment. The president also announced that two U.S. military hospital ships are to be deployed, one going to New York City and the other location as yet determined. Those hospital ships, they can handle up to 1,000 patients at a time. They travel the world and usually in crisis zones. And of course, the United States at this point classifies at least some parts of it as a crisis zone. So that's something that's happening right there. And it's also a recognition that many frontline personnel, nurses, doctors, firefighters, those kinds of people who are providing essential services simply don't have the gear and the material to protect themselves. There are stories even of doctors in New York City who are having to use bandanas tied around their mouths and nose because there simply are no surgical masks. So it's clearly a very significant matter right now and one that the White House is addressing. You're listening to VOA Asia.
What's among the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com? It may be trade or economic developments in the region. Are the currents calm or choppy in the South China Sea? What is happening in reclusive North Korea? Is there a new movie or technology that interests you? China is huge and diverse. There's always something happening in the Middle Kingdom. You'll find expanded coverage of all of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on the voanews.com website.
There's another story, this one coming to us from Jeff Selden. Jeff is our national security correspondent here at Voice of America. This is an interesting one, too. One aspect that people maybe not have thought of much, cyber threat increases as more Americans telework. Now, of course, I'm teleworking. The whole staff here at English to Asia is teleworking, and many, many people around the country are, those who can at least. And he writes this, the race to slow the spread of the coronavirus in the United States is placing an unprecedented burden on the country's cyber infrastructure, potentially making it as vulnerable as it has ever been. At issue are the U.S. government agencies, thousands of businesses, and millions of Americans who suddenly have been forced to telework and rely on the security of their internet connections and good cyber hygiene to keep businesses and services running. The result, some officials warn, is an opening for anyone who would like to strike a virtual blow. Here's this quote: "We're mindful that our adversaries often see opportunity in situations like this," a U.S. official told VOA, "on the condition of anonymity, given the sensitive nature of the subject." Both the FBI and private cybersecurity firms warned that the assault is already well underway. Now, this is of great concern with so many millions of Americans logging on, often from home. They may not have the most secure internet. They may be getting emails that look like they're from officials in their office, but they're not. They're spam. They're phishing attacks. This is a real problem moving forward. That's when he uses the term practicing good cyber hygiene. That simply just means, just as you would wash your hands repeatedly and not sneeze into the open air, but sneeze into your elbow or into a handkerchief. When you're online, you should not be going to strange websites. You should not be clicking on buttons you don't know who they're from. You shouldn't even really be opening emails that you don't know who the people are from or that you didn't ask for, because it's very possible that it might be a phishing attack, a spear phishing attack, some kind of attack underway. So those are just a couple of stories right now. Let's take a look, a very quick look at one last one. This is one that's been a lot of interest to a lot of people. U.S. lawmakers race to prop up economy slammed by the coronavirus. Now, as soon as the stock market in the United States opened on Thursday, it immediately fell within 5 minutes, about 400 points. This story begins: U.S. lawmakers are racing to try to offset some of the severe damage wrought on the economy by attempts to contain the coronavirus. The stock market plunged again Wednesday, wiping out most of its gains under President Trump's administration as activity in public places across the country grinds to a halt. And of course, this reflected not only in a very poor stock market, but more and more Americans are losing their jobs. They're being furloughed. They're being laid off. There's simply not enough work to go around. So this of critical importance, and lawmakers debating measures whether how to get money into the hands of Americans again, especially those who need it. We're going to take a short break right now, but of course we will be back. And we come back, we're going to be hearing from an expert in the field of international commerce about just what may be happening now and where things are going to go in the future. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are collecting and aggregating some of the best news stories that we can find for the fullest portrait. You can find them all on our webpage, voanews.com. There you can find stories by Voice of America reporters, some of our sister broadcasters, and organizations like AFP, Reuters, and AP. This is VOA Asia coming to you from the Voice of America. The coronavirus pandemic has had a massive effect on the world's economy. The entire travel industry joins hundreds, if not thousands, of other businesses that have either been greatly diminished or even ruined. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Philip Levy, formerly an economist in the administration of U.S. President George Bush. Mr. Levy is now chief economist for the international shipping company Flexport. He spoke with Ira Melman from his home in the San Francisco Bay Area, where he is quarantined by the virus, as are most people in the California Bay Area. And he was asked about how the effects of the virus have moved geographically.
The way this all started, we had China essentially extending its Chinese New Year break and then being fairly slow to get capacity back online for entering goods into supply chains. What we're seeing now, as you get places like France, Germany, Italy, and now major parts of the U.S. going on a version of lockdown, is that we're going to be doing our own version of Chinese New Year, where everything shuts down for a while. And given the interconnectedness of the supply chains, you need everybody online to have the global economy functioning well.
Have they done their job the correct way, as far as you're concerned?
I think countries like China and South Korea have made very impressive progress, sometimes after a faltering start, but in tackling the pandemic. And it seems that the data are showing that they're getting declines in new cases, which is very encouraging. I devoutly hope that continues. It's great that they're getting people back to work, great that they're poised to be back in business. The problem they're going to encounter is we're just starting to see the effects on supply chains in a lot of the rest of the world. One of the things we're starting to see is if you get goods shipped from Asia to the United States, what happens once they get here? So the ports are working fine. There are starting to be some signs of problems with warehousing. Are things getting cleared out of warehouses at an appropriate pace? And so if things get jammed up at warehouses, you won't be able to sort of keep bringing in more goods.
It seems like the situation that was in place in China in the beginning has now switched to here, which is, I think, is what you were explaining earlier on. But can you explain that in terms that everyone can understand?
For economies to function well, we need workers to be able to show up to work, to be healthy. We need truckers to move things around, ships and planes to be able to go back and forth. And that has to be true throughout the interconnected parts of the global economy. We initially saw China, where workers were not able to go to work, people were not all healthy, and while China has overcome that, that problem has spread to other parts of the global economy, and the system as a whole is not yet healthy.
How has that affected the shipping of necessary goods around the world?
Perhaps the most notable thing that's affected shipping of necessary goods, in a time where you've had interruptions like this, the normal thing to do is to turn to air freight, that you say, I'm not going to wait for things to sail across the ocean. I'm going to try to move them as quickly as I possibly can. We've seen dramatic reductions in air freight capacity. It turns out that something like 50 to 80% of air freight travels in the belly of passenger planes. So when you get those flights called off, you lose all that capacity. So we're seeing rapidly increasing prices in air freight and real capacity constraints.
What do you think the damage to the U.S. economy has been so far, and how do you project it into the immediate future?
It's a very interesting time in that most of the big national data releases we're getting are historical. They're looking backwards before this impact really hit. So we're getting numbers for February, for example. We don't yet know what this is going to be going forward. I expect it to be fairly severe. There was a release of economists surveyed that showed that for the second quarter, the range of estimates went between about negative 3% at an annual rate impact on GDP to negative almost 12% in the second quarter. First, that's fairly dire. These are negative numbers. Second, the range gives you an idea just how uncertain we are about how this will all play out.
Do you think that the right policies are now in place in the United States for a recovery?
I think that we are starting to get the federal government taking this seriously. I think there's several components to what we're looking at for recovery. First and foremost, there's the health measures. What are we doing to flatten the curve, as people say, to contain the pandemic? Second, what's happening with monetary policy and financial markets? We saw cuts in interest rates, but probably more important, we're seeing active interventions in markets that looked like they were about to freeze up. And then we're starting to get serious discussion of fiscal stimulus policies. So those are all encouraging signs.
What happened that we were so slow in the United States in getting underway?
I think there was... We sort of let our guard down in terms of planning. You've actually had predictions for years that a global pandemic would pose a major threat. We saw an office that was meant to address that in the National Security Council that was disbanded under this administration. And we were slow off the mark when I believe the first case in the U.S. was in late January. And for an epidemic where the infections seem to double in somewhere between 5 days and a week, losing several weeks was a very, very unfortunate error. We have to do what we can moving forward.
Do you think that the damage being done is insurmountable? If you do, explain why. If you don't, explain why.
I don't know that it's insurmountable, but we should also be very clear. This is not something that is going to be easy to climb out of. As a rule, you don't get economies where you can, you know, flip them on and off with a switch. That if we really do get things shutting down, as we appear to be through a lockdown, the concern is that we come out with sort of great caution, and how long does it take before people feel ready to go shopping again, to take transcontinental flights, spend an evening in a restaurant. It's, you know, I hope that we're able to get through the health portion of this with minimal damage. It will be serious, but hopefully we can contain it as much as possible. There's going to be economic damage that follows.
Now, you yourself, you care to explain what's happened with you?
I think it was six or seven counties took anticipatory action and decided that it would be a near lockdown for these counties, where we are not supposed to leave our home except for a little bit of exercise, urgent medical matters, or provisioning. And so that is what we're doing.
That was Philip Levy, who was a former economist in the administration of U.S. President George W. Bush. He was speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Well, we're going to take a short break right now, but when we come back, we'll have some helpful hints and tips how you can keep yourself, your loved ones, and your family safe. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube. News alerts from VOA Asia keep you up to date on the biggest stories as they happen. Listen daily to VOA Asia and stop by our Facebook page to get daily headlines and all of our latest posts with features and breaking news. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia.
Welcome back to VOA Asia, coming your way from Washington, D.C. I'm Doug Bernard. At this point in our program, as we wind up, we're going to take a look at some hints and suggestions that come from some of the nation's top leading epidemiologists about what you can do to keep yourself, your friends, and your family from contracting the coronavirus and to keep it from spreading. Now, one of the biggest tactics that's being employed and that people are talking about is something called social distancing. And I found that there's a lot of confusion around this term. What does it mean? Well, it sort of sounds just like what it means. So imagine you're out at a grocery store, or you're waiting in line at a cash machine, or you're at the doctor's office. It's very natural for people to queue up sort of one behind each other, keep things very efficient, keep the lines moving. That is not social distancing, and getting people that close together unfortunately becomes a prime vector for how the coronavirus can spread, because it is a respiratory virus. So it's spread through the air, through sneezing, through coughing, through touching, that kind of thing. So what social distancing is in part that you should maintain 6 feet of distance from people in front of you and people behind you. The CDC is strongly recommending, that's the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, that people practice this 6 foot distance. And that's when they have to go out at all. If you don't have to go out, if you don't have to go to the grocery store or go to the doctors or other sort of critical needs, then they're saying, don't go out. Stay home. Keep yourself safe there, because at least you have a much smaller window of individuals and people to work with. Now, social distancing may also at times mean that let's say there's two people in a household, and one of them unfortunately tests positive for coronavirus. That person should not social distance. That person should put themselves immediately into quarantine. Now, what quarantine is just no contact with anybody whatsoever, unless it's an emergency room in the hospital, and only then if they tell you to come in. So that person who tests positive, they should be isolated in a room. I know it's difficult, but they should be kept away from contact with any other family members, even to the point that when food is ready, that the people without the virus can bring food, say, on a tray and set it outside their door and knock on the door and then walk away and then let the person inside that room pick up the tray, eat their food, and then when they're done, they leave that tray outside the door and they close it. There are ways that people can communicate without going stir crazy. The internet is one of them. Telephones are another one. Even just shouting through the door may help. But if an individual in a household tests positive for coronavirus, that person should immediately be quarantined. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are collecting and aggregating some of the best news stories that we can find for the fullest portrait. You can find them all on our webpage, voanews.com. There you can find stories by Voice of America reporters, some of our sister broadcasters, and organizations like AFP, Reuters, and AP. A few other things that you can do to help keep yourself safe. By all means, wash your hands. You're tired of hearing it, but wash your hands more often than you think. And don't just run them underwater. I mean, wash them. Use soap and hot water and get in there for a good 20, 30 second scrub before you dry off. That's what's needed, and it's needed frequently. Second thing, don't touch stuff that you don't have to be touching. Let's say your face, because what happens is people may sneeze. They may sneeze into their hand. They may sneeze just sort of out into the air. That virus, if they have it, is all there. And if it's on their hand, well, now it's on the door handle, and it's on the elevator button, and it's on the water fountain, and it's on the people that person touches, and all of a sudden it's everywhere. So that is a major thing. Don't, if you're going to sneeze into your shoulder, into your elbow, I should say, or a handkerchief, and don't touch things you don't have to. That especially includes your face. And the third thing that people are recommending is, this is perhaps without saying, get rest. People are stressed as it is. And by the way, these are all recommendations from the CDC. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Avoid contact with people who are sick. Cover your cough. Clean and disinfect objects and surfaces as much as possible. This perhaps is all sensible stuff, but it's stuff that we have to be doing, and we have to be doing it regularly and routinely if we're going to, in any way, as they say, bend that curve and help slow the progress of the virus. Because if you look at a number of countries, the United States included, it's not slowing. In fact, it's picking up exponentially in some places, which is causing a great deal of worry. So again, keep yourself safe, avoid contact with people, practice social distancing, don't be touching things you don't have to touch, limit contact with the outside world. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't go outside. If you want to go for a bike ride and it's a beautiful day, go for a bike ride, enjoy the outside, enjoy the sunshine. Just don't do it with a bunch of other people. Do it by yourself. If you want to go to a park and look at the flowers, fine. Just don't do it where there are lots of people around. So sensible things, but important things. That is our program for today and for this week. I know it's been a difficult one, but we promise that we are going to be here throughout this entire crisis, bringing you the very best information that we can. And until then, we ask that you take care of yourselves and others and be well.